This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark, and here in the studios with me, my very learned colleagues, Wong Xiaoning and Sharitz Abdullah. Good morning, guys.
Morning, Lynn.
Good morning, Lynn.
How are you today?
Getting better.
Oh, were you?
But
yes,
not too
you
bad.
Were sick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bit, so you could tell by my nasally voice today.
That's kind of sexy, Sharitz.
Oh, thank you, Xiaoning. Very nice of you. It makes me feel better.
Exactly. So did you guys know that today is the, I think, 10-year anniversary of the swearing-in of our former Prime Minister, Datuk Seri Najib Razak?
That's right. 2009, April the 3rd, right?
Yes, that's right. And it's amazing how far we've come since then. We should be, I think he is also due in court over the course of these few days.
Where did celebrate your 10-year anniversary.
Where did the 10 years go?
Who knows? It's also the coincidentally the 3-year anniversary of the Panama Papers leak.
Ah, right. Mm.
So that's going to be an interesting thing to consider, all things considered. And what are we up to today, guys?
Right. So if you're like me, I used to sing a lot of patriotic songs when I was a kid. And the song that I really, you know, that I could remember back then was the Wawasan 2020. And guess what? We're 1 year away.
Ah.
Yeah, you know what was in 2020. So anyway, the Prime Minister had, you know, the Prime Minister's Department Assembly yesterday and started sharing some values. And guess what? They sang a song too. So we're going to, you know, ask you, what do you think about patriotic songs and how do you feel about it?
And Sharitz is going to sing us a couple of patriotic songs.
Yeah,
how about that?
Yeah, if you were to, you know, pay me $1,000, why not?
Okay, what else do we have?
Well, up next, we have a story on misinformation and fake news and how it's everywhere in the Indian elections, which is just round the corner.
Right. But before that, we will be coming back to you with a little bit of a talk about Google's AI Ethics Council. In the meantime, here is Jungle Boogie by Kool and the Gang at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharitz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. So Google has appointed an external counsel to deal with ethical issues in the field of artificial intelligence, but Bloomberg reports that less than a week later, the council is already falling apart. So members of the council have had petitions started against them, have been removed or resigned of their own accord. I mean, it sounds like a great initiative, but it looks like the execution's not going so well.
Yeah, so you know, the issue of artificial intelligence and also ethic, it has been going on for a while. And it is a difficult topic to really consider. I mean, there's a lot of element that sort of contributes as to what constitutes ethics for the AI, right? I mean, there's a lot of there's elements like culture, for an example. There's so many different cultures, and AI is supposed to be a global thing. So, yeah, that's tough, isn't
it? Actually, the World Economic Forum came out with a list of the top 9 ethical issues in artificial intelligence, I think actually 3 years ago. So that was already, so the conversation was clearly already starting to happen then. And they talk about things like unemployment, what happens after the end of jobs, how to defend against the possibility of singularity. So what to do in the case robots take on a life of their own.
I have visions of Terminator, Lynn. You know, where the general presses the button and the AI just takes over the universe.
Right.
And that's the end of it for mankind. So, yeah, I have great reservations about AI because I think sometimes we rely too much on it already. And it's not just the AI, but the collection of data by these AIs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything we do, from the movies we watch on Netflix to the time we sleep because we have our Fitbits, it's all up there in the cloud. Everybody knows what we do.
Yeah.
Right. And what do you do with all this data?
That's right. I mean, there's a difference between AI and robotics, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
Robotics is about that extra mechanism to help you, you know, to make things easier, to make things lighter, for an example. But AI is like introducing a new brain, someone who is able to make decisions
and knows exactly what you do.
Exactly.
And isn't that scary?
It is.
I don't know. Do you find it scary?
I do find it a little bit scary. But then artificial intelligence was also initially created as something to simply make your lives a little bit easier, right? We whenever we think of artificial intelligence, we go completely to the other extreme and we think of some mechanical brain living in the sky. But actually, it can be something as simple as helping you anticipate when you need to buy groceries. That doesn't seem so bad.
I don't know. Is it so complicated to know when you need to buy groceries? I mean, just open your fridge and you have a look and you're like, I don't have food. I go to the shop.
Yeah. And at the same time, I mean, there's some real world issues as well. For example, the aging population and also the lack of the fertility growth around the world. For example, in Japan, right, they started talking about AI quite a lot lately as a result to sort of help the aging population, because eventually there's probably not enough population to sort of support the groups there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not completely against AI, but I think I want to be the master of my own life, you know, and these are machines. I tell them what to do, they do it. They shouldn't tell me what to do and when to do it. That's my worldview, but, you know.
Yeah. So another thing that at the time, I think the World Economic Forum highlighted is how do we treat robots humanely? So apparently this is a consideration when we're talking about AI, because we're looking forward to a time when possibly machines become advanced enough to have feelings. And at what point do you draw the line between how you would treat a human and how you would treat a robot? Because what if the robot has feelings too?
Yeah, and speaking about robots and feelings, Saudi Arabia has pretty much given a citizenship to one of its AI robot, and her name is Sophia. Isn't that a nice name? So Sophia is a social humanoid robot developed in Hong Kong, and it's developed in Hong Kong, but apparently it's been given a citizenship in Saudi Arabia.
This is so scary. Why would a robot have feelings? It's made of like metal bits, right, and wires.
I mean, if you think about it, we are not that far off. We are just made up of squishier bits and wires.
Well, they can be squishy as well. But another thing is that Singapore has just announced their autonomous bus.
Okay.
Several months ago, mm-hmm. and that's when it will come into question. I mean, when a bus comes into a situation where it's into a life and death situation, how does it decide? As in, is it the life that, you know, the one life that's about to hit, or the life that's inside the bus? I mean, and then it's not just that, as it's also about accountability. Who's going to be accountable when the bus makes a decision?
It's going to be really interesting to see how this field of artificial intelligence develops and how we grow, how we develop our ethical environment around it as well, because we have to make nice with the robots just in case they eventually do decide to take over the world. So we'll be right back with a song after this. But in the meantime, stick around, because after that, we'll be talking a little bit about misinformation. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Xiaoning and Sharit. Xiaoning, you like this song, right? It's Mr. Cab Driver by Lenny Kravitz.
I like all Lenny Kravitz songs.
I'm tempted to ask you to sing it for us, but
no,
then
I can't sing. I have a squeaky voice.
I think we'll save our singing for later when we ask Sharit to
sing
us some patriotic songs. But in the meantime, India's elections are coming up within the next 2 weeks and 900 million people will go to the polls. But this article from The Atlantic points out that aside from the parties running for the election, social media is also going to be playing a huge role in the Indian election. So at least 24 people have been lynched following rumours on WhatsApp over the last couple of years. So we're really seeing the power of social media, and it's being turned towards election campaigning. I think this is quite fascinating, because we're seeing this starting to happen now in Asia. We saw it a little bit, the power of it in the US elections during 2016. But now India is, I think, one of WhatsApp's largest markets. There are something like 235 million people on WhatsApp in India. And it's really underscoring just how powerful social media sharing can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, India has been you know, WhatsApp, they keep very close eye on the development in India, and they've made a lot of changes on WhatsApp. For example, I think they've limited the number of forwarded message that you can do. All those things that you saw in WhatsApp that was introduced in the past few months was as a result of what's been happening in India. And like you said, it has cost an election, especially in the US, 2016. But this is not new development. I mean, we have seen sort of traction in the subject of fake news. Malaysia, we too introduced a fake news bill last year, early in 2018.
Hasn't been repealed.
Which has not been repealed. But just before we, we're considering on repealing it, Singapore is about to introduce their fake news bill as well.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see how that is going to be implemented. And I think, Lynn, there's a show coming up on this, right, at 7:30?
Yes, so we're going to be talking a little bit more about Singapore's new fake news bill later on after the 7:30 news. So be sure to stick around for that discussion.
Yeah, so the issue about fake news is how well it is written, isn't it? I mean, people dedicate their time to make it look very real.
That is so true.
Right? And yes. So you can't blame those who are not familiar with, you know, what is genuine, what's not genuine, you know, those...
It's hard to discern what is real and what is fake.
That's right. Especially, I mean, I hate saying this, but the sort of the senior generation, I mean, a lot of them fall victim of this tragic...
It's really because of a lack of internet literacy, right? So it's not just the older generation. It's also places like, for example, Cambodia. So Cambodia has a high number of has quite a high smartphone penetration, and a lot of them read Facebook for news, and that's where you get a lot of. So you see a lot of fake news being propagated on Facebook, but because there isn't a corresponding degree of net literacy, you do see the spreading and the kind of almost absorption of fake news at an alarmingly high rate.
But I think it boils down to us too, right? We get this fake news all the time, but what do we do about it? I mean, sometimes I think we are guilty of just pressing the forward button. But if it looks suspicious, shouldn't we verify and then verify and verify again?
Yeah, but how? I mean, some people don't know how to verify, right?
Google.
At what point?
Google.
So go back to reliable news sources. You know, Facebook is not reliable in some way.
WhatsApp is not reliable. I remember during GE14, there were all sorts of messages floating around. And I was a journalist at the time covering the elections. And I got really irritated with my friends who would send things to WhatsApp groups to say, I'm not sure this is happening, but I'm just sharing it just in case.
Don't do that.
Just don't do that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I think the other thing we can do is, if our friends are guilty of it, and I'm probably, you know, guilty of it myself sometimes, is that if I know it's fake news, I should then resend another WhatsApp and say, sorry guys, this is rubbish. I'm sorry, I sent out some crap, you know, don't look at it.
Yeah, so tell us what you think. Tell us what you do as well. Do you verify what you share? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. But in the meantime, here is Sweet Dreams by Eurythmics, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark and I'm here with Shariz Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. So in the Prime Minister's address at the PM's Department Assembly yesterday, Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad highlighted some values which are important for public services, public servants, as they are the government's machinery. So those values were diligence, trustworthiness, discipline and responsibility. And they also debuted a song that has just been written, and it is called Malaysia Bersih. What do you guys think about this?
Well, I think it's a great way to remember what values you sort of have to project, you know, as a government servant. I think I remember back in school, I was taught songs to remember stuff. I don't know. I had this very wonderful geography teacher. So I wonder if this is just one mechanism for civil servants to, you know, to have those values stuck to them by singing it,
sure,
patriotically.
Sharice, do you remember any of these songs? Can you please sing us a little snippet?
No. Can we not go there, please? We can talk about the list of songs, but we're not going to go to the point where I have to sing it.
Okay, we won't put you on the spot. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really agree with the whole you must have a song to showcase your patriotism thing. Because, I mean, do you guys remember in school we would always sing patriotic songs around Merdeka Day? But that was really the only time that we ever sang those songs. What other times are they relevant?
I know. And I don't think any of us enjoy it now, do we? I mean, we look like we're forced to sing it most of the time.
I think we should just sing our Negara Ku well and with pride. And that's enough, you know. I mean, like in US, they sing their Star Spangled Banner at every event, every big event before sporting events. And sing it well. I think that's enough, you know.
But a patriotic song wrote well, and, you know, if the music is nice too, it does sort of spark that sense of, you know, that energy. I mean, I was, back when I was in military school, there was a few military songs that we used to sing, and it really gets us pumped up, you know, and you know, it also creates that sense of camaraderie when you sing together, and, you know, that sense of unity. And I think that's ultimately why people still promote sort of national patriotic songs. It's to try and get everybody to be in sync and singing in tune.
It's true. Some of them are quite catchy. Okay, the only one that I can remember off the top of my head is Kuranamu Malaysia. And, it has that kind of march beat. So you could theoretically, like, walk along and cheer with your flags to it. But ultimately, I don't think I ever quite felt that same swell of patriotism that you clearly did, Sharit. So I don't know. I still think that writing a song to commemorate, okay, you know, you can write a song to commemorate a new Malaysia, but to remind people of the values that that we stand for, I'm not sure whether a song really is the right way to go about it. I mean, you can write songs all you want, but if you don't emulate those values, then what's the point?
Yeah. So I think bottom line is it's more about, you know, they're trying to instill discipline, but there are many other ways besides singing a song. It really goes at the fundamental level, but also reflects at the same time how indisciplined we are in some ways.
But I don't know,
a lot of us are.
Well, do you need a song to remind you that you should be diligent, trustworthy, disciplined and responsible?
Well, looking at the amount of corruption case that comes in, I guess
it
can't hurt. I mean, that's one way. I'm sure they're open to any other suggestions.
Enforcement, perhaps, is better than a song.
Prevention is better than the
prevention,
cure.
Yes. Prevention is better than the cure. Well, let us know what you think about this. What makes a good propaganda song, or even further than that, do they even work? WhatsApp us 01878988899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we'll be right back to talk about Malaysian hotels. So stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wang Xiaoning. Thank you for all your messages. We have some tweets, I believe, on our talk sets today.
Yeah, that's right. So we got a tweet from Ivan Lowe. Thank you so much, Ivan, for tweeting in. He's saying, heck, we sometimes don't even fully understand the lyrics of our favorite songs, let alone sing them. And I'm guilty of that as well. Sometimes I just sing and I don't know what I'm saying.
It's quite true. It's true. We're all guilty of it. And Paul actually reminded us that there were many, many patriotic songs during Mahathir's first reign.
Yes, so Paul also says, I love Sejahtera Malaysia, Gemilang, Saya Anak Malaysia, and the Lim Kok Wing version of One Malaysia. See, I'm very curious about this. I've never heard, I didn't realise that there was a Lim Kok Wing version of the One Malaysia song.
I do hum the song Sejahtera Malaysia to my daughters, to my kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to put them to sleep.
You're trying.
So
to,
I wonder what that says.
You're right? Trying to incept them young, are you?
Well, no, like I said, it's to put them to sleep. So I wonder what this, you know, what's
this
say?
Are you saying the song is boring?
I didn't say that. You probably said that. and we also got a text from Ro, and he's saying that prevention is better than cure. So just endure this song. It does not do any wrong. Don't waste time on enforcement. So someone is more keen on songs than enforcement, really. I'm quite inclined to that. I mean, it's you know, the idea of just trying to prevent someone from doing bad. I mean, singing a song, I mean, well, what harm can that do, right? I mean, that's not the worst thing you can sort of introduce. I mean, it doesn't cost a lot of money, I'm sure, unless you make a video clip.
Yeah. We also have a tweet from Atius Warren, who's talking a little bit about what we were saying about who decides what's ethical for artificial intelligence. And he says, greedy businessmen who will and can capitalize on AI. So a little bit more on the skeptical side, I believe. I think he's also replied to the song discussion and asking him, when we asked what makes a good propaganda song, he says you need to read between the lines.
Yeah, Really? Is it cryptic?
I don't know. I feel like they tend to be very straightforward because, you know, they want to appeal to the masses. But at the same time, you do have to be aware of the intent of the song.
Yeah, there's a message behind every word, right?
P. Ramlee used to do that. I think there's a lot of message in between the lines. Some of his patriotic songs. But yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Actually, speaking of songs due to Malaysia or related to Malaysia, I don't know whether you guys remember the tourism campaign. So like Malaysia Truly Asia, Cuti Cuti Malaysia, those were, I think, really successful. And the tune, the jingle, really did stick in your head. And we actually have some news actually out of the Star. So some hotels here in Malaysia are receiving a higher percentage of local guests. So this is from the Star too. And according to Marriott International, domestic tourists remain the top source market for last year. They experienced an 8.5% growth in local guests. So I guess these are Malaysians who are going for staycations, perhaps in their neighbourhoods, or even just going like from KL to Penang.
Yeah, so I guess staycation is really catching on. I'm a big fan of that. Sometimes it's just a matter of wanting to get away from your home and get into a nice hotel and, you know, just... you know, let the kids just jump around without having us to clean up.
I thought you were going to say get away from the kids for a second there.
Yeah, we do that as well. I didn't want to say it out loud, but...
Well, I think sometimes it's also a case of just our weak ringgit, right, guys? I mean, it's depreciated quite a fair bit in the last few years. So it's cheaper to just travel in Malaysia.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's traveling can also just be a novelty. Some, you know, it's just something that you want to do for the first time or second time. But after that, it's just, look, staying in a hotel in Bangkok is probably the same as staying in a hotel in you know, somewhere in KL.
It's true, especially when you go to the large hotel chains, right? Because from one city to another, there's often not much of a difference. So I guess going to stay in, or instead of spending on an airfare, you can splurge a little bit more and go stay at the Four Seasons, for example. So do tell us what you think again. We'll be right back after this with more international headlines. But first, With or Without You by U2, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.